Hey Hoopheads, we appreciate you listening to this episode of Daily Thunder. Be sure to check out other NBA pods on the Hoopheads Podcast Network, including Cavalier Central, Nuck If You Buck, 305 Culture, Spanning the Spurs, Hashtag Lakers, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, LA Hoops, The Wizards Hoops Analyst, At the Buzzer, and Lakers Fast Break. There are also coaching-focused podcasts, Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachesMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, and Courtside Culture. Oh, and don't forget the network's flagship, the Hoopheads podcast, hosted by Mike Klinzing and Jason Sunkel, and featuring the best minds in the game, from its grassroots to the NBA. What is up, Thunder fans? We are back. We are back. We are back. The boys are back. I'm here with Brandon Rabar, Old Faithful, our trusty beat writer at Daily Thunder. And we are here to discuss a whole lot because we have not been together on a podcast in, what, 2 months? 2.5 months? So this is our first podcast since the season started. Multiple reasons for that, but we are stoked to be back. And Brandon, how's it going, bud?
I'm good, man. I'm excited to talk more Thunder. Like, it's been a fun season so far. And yeah, I missed you, man. How you been?
Been good. It's been a wild couple of months. Oklahoma City played tonight. We're recording this after the Thunder beat the Nets in Brooklyn. That was a game that was without Kevin Durant. He rested, and Kyrie Irving still cannot play home games, which this will be a fun like timestamp, January 14th, January 13th. Kyrie still can't play home games. I think that's going to probably change in the near future. So, Oklahoma City probably catches a little bit of a bad break here with Kyrie not playing. But we do get to talk about a couple of incredible games from Shea in his last two at Washington and then at Brooklyn. Just your thoughts off the jump on Shea bouncing back from a couple games that were a little subpar.
Yeah, so it's so funny because, you know, Shea won that NBA Western Conference Player of the Week around Christmas, and then he was one of four nominees for December Western Conference Player of the Month, right? So, you know, he's doing well. Then all of a sudden, January starts, and he has a few rough games, especially that last game against the Nuggets where he scored 8 points on 2 of 14 shooting. All right, so, you know, every player has down games, but, man, people were ready to drag Shea. They're, like, saying, you know, he's not worth a max contract. You know, he's maybe he needs to be dealt. The Thunder are going to regret giving him all that money. You know, he forgot how to shoot. Last year was a fluke. It's just so funny. First of all, the dude is getting more double teams than anybody in the league. I mean, that's just facts. I mean, you know, the evidence backs it up. And he's getting less space to shoot with. Last year, he had Al Horford and George Hill to help space things out. Anyways, it's just funny to me because what happens right after he has his worst game, he bounces back with a 32-point game and then a 33-point game, 13 of 22 versus the Wizards, 11 of 18 against the Nets, 3 of 7 total from three between the two games. He was one assist away from a triple-double, and it would have been a 33-point, 10-rebound, 10-assist, 1-steal, 2-block triple-double. Just absolutely worked the Nets tonight. Was by far the best player on the court, and that's saying something because Lou Dort was on the court tonight as well, and I guess James Harden too. But, of course, Shea didn't have to be defended by Lou Dort and James Harden's defense. But yeah, so Shea's still that dude. Like, there's no doubt. We saw it last year. It wasn't a fluke. To me, it wasn't a small sample size. he's taken a lot of shots this year that are really, really difficult shots because teams are just swarming him. They're doubling him. They're tripling him. They won't let him get to the paint as much as he wants to. You know, he doesn't get to shoot catch and shoot threes. He's got to be the creator. Now, some of that's going to go to Giddey more and more, and we saw that tonight. I actually saw him take a catch and shoot three. Of course, he drained it. He's still shooting over 40% on catch and shoot threes. To me, that's the important thing. You know, most of his efficiency has had to do with, you know, how difficult the shots have been. But Shea is still Shea. He didn't forget how to play.
I do want to talk about tonight's game for a second. Oklahoma City completely shot the lights out. I mean, it was an incredible. It was the most threes they've made in this season. For a while, they were stuck on the 18th three, which was tying the season high mark. And then they eclipsed it. They hit, let's see, I'm looking at the box score now. They finished with 20 three-pointers, 20 of 45, 44%. I got to be honest, watching the game, it reminded me of, let's go back to like the contending years when Oklahoma City would have a team come to Oklahoma City and a team that they should absolutely beat that comes in and just can't miss threes. It reminded me so much of those games where Oklahoma City gets picked off at home to a lesser opponent that just can't miss. It brought back a lot of poor memories, but it also was funny to be on the other side of that and have a team that just played super hard and shot super well. So Oklahoma City played 10 players tonight. 8 of them hit a three, and 6 or 5 of them hit more than one. Shea finished with 2 of 5. Dort 6 of 10. Giddey 3 of 11. Giddey shot 11 three-pointers. That might be, looking at the box score, I think that's the most surprising number on the entire thing from Oklahoma City's perspective. 11 threes from Giddey. Yeah. 1 of 2 for Wiggins, 1 of 5 for Jerome. Trey Mann, 1 of 2. We need to talk about Trey Mann. Darius Bazley, 2 of 5. And then old faithful Mike Muscala cannot miss, 4 of 4. I was at the Washington game and got there pretty early, and Muscala was the last player on the floor during shoot around. And it really is amazing. You're at these games a lot. This is the first time I've seen Oklahoma City in person in a couple years. And I marvel at these guys and their shooting ability, but Muscala specifically, like for his entire warm-up and then when the team came out in pregame, I don't think he touched the rim until he got in the game. It was like really, really impressive. He is such a good shooter. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, surely a team is going to come calling about Mike Muscala.
Right. Yeah, no, he's been absurd. He has turned into this crazy efficient microwave scorer where he's playing like 12, 13, 14 minutes a night and, you know, busting off 12, 13, 14, 15 points a night. I mean, he's getting up, you know, maybe 5 threes and hitting 3 of them a night. Like, it's just absurd. Of course, tonight he didn't miss. He would be a guy that would help out so many playoff teams. So many contenders could use Mike Muscala. He's a 6'11 guy that's hitting, you know, like over 42% on his threes. And he's not a bad defensive player either. You know, he's so smart. You know, he's not athletic or big or anything like that, beefy. But he's so smart. He plays solid defense as well. You know, it's so funny. The Lakers going there and doing anything decently can like help your reputation so much, and going there and doing anything even halfway badly can tarnish your reputation. Mike Muscala, before he played that like half a season with the Lakers, might have been full season, I can't remember. You know, he had a pretty good reputation. Then he went there and he didn't have the best season. Then all of a sudden, you know, his reputation was he was this negative player. He comes to Oklahoma City. He's been killing it since he's been in OKC. And especially this season, you know, if the Thunder played him more, they would really risk hurting their lottery odds. You know, even the 12 to 14 minutes, those that want a top five pick are just kind of clenching their teeth because he's hitting so many shots. But Mike Muscala would absolutely help a contender. And I think that the Thunder will get calls and Sam Presti will have to weigh, like, at what point is the offer good enough that you give up a guy? They love his character, locker room, culture. He loves the community, the fans. There's this, you know, mutual love between, you know, the fans and Mike Muscala and the team. But at some point, he's on a, like, a vet minimum, and he could really help a team. So they're going to get offers. And, you know, I can't see the Thunder letting him go. But, you know, maybe, you know, they get an offer they can't refuse. I don't know.
He played 12 minutes tonight, scored 14 points, was a plus 22 in 12 minutes. Really is amazing. Shea, like you said, one assist away from a triple-double, 33, 10, and 9. It's been a rough week for Russell Westbrook. What a love letter from Shea to Russ, one assist away from a big triple-double. What an amazing, amazing game from Shea. I was listening to the Nets broadcast tonight. It's very good. And they couldn't get over Shea, which is always so fun. He really has gotten a lot of respect. Like, his respect is really growing league-wide. You can hear it in these other local broadcasts. They know who he is now coming in. Like, pregame, that's all they talk about is slowing this guy down. The Wizards hype guy on the floor pregame, apparently – he's still out of the loop, called him Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Still cringing over that. It was just hilarious. Then they said, the Wizards need to stop rookie Andrew Wiggins. So, yeah, still some catching up to do for the Wizards. So, big question for the night for you, and I know there's going to be an answer that jumps to the front of your mind right away, but I want you to think about it. Oklahoma City they drafted four rookies. They are playing them, all four of them, a lot, much more than we thought. Which rookie has surpassed expectation for you the most?
Oh, man. That's a great question because they've all exceeded expectations. I think that the easy one is to go with Aaron Wiggins because he was the number 55 overall pick and he had, you know, he scored the two highest point total games of all the Thunder rookies with 24 points, 22 points. He had a 7-game streak of double digit points. Obviously JRE, he's become a starter, taking him with the 32nd overall pick. Kind of seems like the buzz has kind of cooled down on him a little bit as it's gone to other guys, and he hasn't been scoring as much, but he's still been, you know, really impressive out there and looks like he belongs. And, you know, he's not making any bad plays. He's just not jumping off the stat sheet right now. Trey Mann, you know, as the number 18 overall pick, everything he does is like SportsCenter top 10 human highlight reel. I said that like his default setting is SportsCenter top 10 highlight. Like he's just ridiculous. Every single step back he makes, every time he jukes somebody out, his floaters, even like his blocks, his passes, his threes, his dunks, obviously, just so much fun. I want more shots and more minutes from Trey Mann. All that said, I think I'd still have to go with Josh Giddey. I know he's number 6 overall pick, and you know I was really, really high on him way before the Thunder even drafted him. He was like one of my guys that I really, really liked. But even as much nerdy research as I did on this draft and as much film as I watched on Josh Giddey, the level he's playing at and how quickly he's adapted and – to a further point, how much better he's been since he's been back from COVID protocols. He's like taking it to another level. Even I, as a certified Josh Giddey fanboy from day one, actually from day zero, since they didn't even draft him yet. Even I would have to pick Josh Giddey as far as exceeding expectations for how good he would be this early.
We've talked about it
over text throughout the year, but I've been blown away by his physicality. Did not think he would come in and be able to push guys around and get where he wants to go, and just look for contact. It's like, what is it about? Like, we saw Steven Adams come over from New Zealand and was the most physical guy on the floor every night. Giddey's the same way. Like, maybe it's the leagues that they're playing in, but like, it's very noticeable. And it was from the beginning how physical he is and how much he like seeks out contact. He doesn't shy away from it a bit, which is very, I mean, for someone his size, you want to see that, but I just didn't expect that at all.
Yeah, no, he really is. You know, there's this one highlight, and when I was watching all this stuff from the NBL, the Australian League, he had this dunk where he came down and he bashed his face on the court, like, hard. You've seen that one, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like he came down and it was like, it's such a hard angle. I was in pain watching it, and he just kind of gingerly gets up, kind of looks at his coach and the ref and says, "I'm all good," and then just trots back down the court. I was like, okay, this dude is tough. Like, this this dude's got like that Steven Adams DNA. I know that like Australia and New Zealand are different, you know, people always, but there's something in the water or something over there, because those dudes are tough.
And you know, he's struggled shooting, no doubt about that. He struggled shooting from three, but his ability to get to the rim, I think we've talked about the things that we are loving about him. Obviously the passing is off the charts. Like, it really is special. It's why he was taken so high. His playmaking ability is so high, especially for his age. I mean, I'm correct in saying he's still the second youngest player in the league.
Yeah, he is.
Like, it's amazing. It's amazing what he's doing at that age. And I think he's such a good fit next to Shea. Like, we've seen those two play really well together. Love that he's, I do want to see over the course of the season that him take a little bit of the burden off of Shea when they're in those lineups together. I would love to see Shea become more of a catch and shoot or catch and react and be able to play a little more in space. But like you're saying, like, everybody's loading up on Shea, and that's a huge reason for that is the lack of shooting on this team and why tonight was such a big surprise. I think you're seeing such a great player in Giddey. And I was excited about Trey Mann when they took him. Still didn't think he would have this impact so early, especially on the offensive end. Like, he's both Giddey and Trey Mann the other night, fans around me were asking me, like, hey, who is that guy? Who is Trey? And they were talking about Trey Mann. Like, he had a killer step back in the first half that had the entire place, like, really kind of on their feet. And people were asking me, like, who is that kid? And I'm like, well, he's a first round pick from Florida, and he's much better than we thought he was going to be at this point. So it's been a blast to see him. JRE's just, he's so competent at everything. Like, he seems so much older than he is and plays like it. He plays with such maturity and poise and all of those intangibles that you love to see in any player, but especially a rookie. Like, I've been, you know, I quote tweeted myself the other day. I asked if Sam Presti took the night off on draft night. I was not thrilled with specifically what happened with the 16th pick. I bow down once again. Like, he did such a great job that night, not only gathering some competent players, some players that can really help this team for the long run, but also positioning the team for future drafts at the same time. So overall, I give this rookie class an A, and we're only a little more than halfway through the season. I've been so impressed.
Yeah, it's been unreal. Look, tonight the Thunder started three rookies. Two of them are second rounders, and then the other rookie, Trey Mann, was the first guy off the bench. And look, I know that the Nets were without KD. I know that they were out without Kyrie and LaMarcus Aldridge and Patty Mills. I get it. But look, they still had James Harden. They still had a few other competent NBA players. They were down. But you're still winning with 2 second rounders and another rookie in the starting lineup. So four of your top six guys are rookies, and you're winning by 20 points on the road. It's still an impressive win. This rookie class it's been pretty incredible, because it's so hard to hit in the draft. You know, outside of like the top 2, 3, 4, 5 players, it's really kind of a crapshoot. And you look at it historically, that's the way it is. And look, could Aaron Wiggins and JRE fall off? Could Trey Mann, you know, end up being, you know, really exciting his rookie year and then, you know, kind of tails off? Sure, possibly. But they've already shown a lot. They've been playing heavy minutes. And these guys look like the real deal. I know that some people are of the mindset, hey, you put anybody out there and give them minutes and give them a role, they're going to put up numbers. I mean, we've seen a lot of young players come through OKC over the years, and a lot of those players have been given chances and been given opportunities, and they haven't put up numbers, or they've put up really bad numbers. These guys, all four of them, at this point, halfway through season one, and yes, it's a small sample size, they all look like hits, which is just that's just kind of unheard of to have four picks, you know, kind of throughout the entire draft. You know, your first one's at 6 and your last one's at 55. And it looks like right now you've hit on all of them. Just really, really impressive.
One last thing on Giddy, at least for now, is his size. Seeing him in person, I know you've been at these games and you've seen this team quite a bit. I was still like taken aback by how big he is. He is so tall. Like, he really makes these, he makes some, even Shea, who is at 6'6", look, you know, he's towering over these guys. He's a legitimate 6'9". And I mean, that is, it's such an advantage for him, but I was just blown away at his size seeing him in person.
Yeah. First off, nice. Second of all, I couldn't let it go. I'm glad you brought up his height, because I'm weirdly kind of obsessed with figuring out whether he's 6'8 or 6'9, because he's listed everywhere as 6'8, right? But he himself on his Twitter said that he's 6'9. But then I've seen him since then say that he's 6'8. So I'm really confused. So I always, like, when I'm, you know, at the games, I'm trying to like look at him. And like, he'll be standing like, you know, kind of toe to toe to somebody. And I'm like, look up their height. Like, okay, is he 6'8", 6'9", 6'10"? Ooh, that guy's 6'10". Josh looks like he's about his height. So yeah, I think he's like 6'8 and 3/4". That's my like official ruling on Josh Giddey's height, which is absolutely humongous for a point guard and somebody with his court vision and passing ability.
The listeners who've been fans for a long time, they also know Thunder fans just get to pick what height they are.
That's true.
They get to just say, no, I'm not 7 foot. I'm 6'9".
KD for like his entire career.
Yeah, no, I'm not a big. I'm actually a small forward. Yeah. I played two guard as a rookie. I'm 6'9". But yeah, so it's been an interesting year for Oklahoma City so far. They have 14 wins. Are you surprised at how many wins they have by mid-January?
You know, it's so funny. So many national talking heads predicted, obviously, that Oklahoma City would come in last place, have by far the worst record, you know, from being called the black guy of the NBA. And there were even some talking heads that said that OKC would struggle to even finish with double digit wins, that they might not even get 10 wins on the season. And here we are at the exact halfway mark, and they already have 14 wins on pace for 28 wins. I am a little bit surprised. I knew what the Thunder had in Shea and that he's a special talent. But outside of that, we didn't know. You know, we know that Lou Dort was a really nice player and he seemed to be improving, but he's kind of taken it to another level. Josh Giddey has been such an X factor being this good. And then, you know, all the rookies stepping up, you know, this team, and we saw it last year when they were supposed to be the worst in the league and, you know, they weren't. And then we saw it the year before when they had like 0.2% odds to make it the playoffs and they ended up being the 5 seed. This team just competes, all out effort, try hards. And if your team tank, it's really frustrating to watch. but if your team, you know, you want to see your Thunder win, you love it. I think that their effort, IQ, and want to has kind of been such a big X factor. That, and we haven't mentioned Kenrich Williams and Mike Muscala being vets that, I mean, they're just, they play such few minutes, but they make such a big impact. And the team is always a plus and the plus minus when those two guys play. When you've got Shea, Giddey, Dort, Kenrich, and Mike Muscala, that's just more talent than teams like Orlando, Detroit, Houston, San Antonio. Those teams have. They're just more talented. Shea's more talented than anybody on those rosters, and I'd throw in the Pacers as well. You know, maybe the Pelicans without Zion, the Blazers without Dame. You know, it's going to be rough. There's kind of a scenario here. You know, OKC is in the 4 spot right now, which is nice because that's 48.1% chance to end up with the top 4 pick. But they are just right now 2.5 games behind the Kings for number 8. And they're, 1.5 games behind the Kings for number 8 and 2.5 behind the Blazers, who just lost Dame for maybe the rest of the season at the 9 spot. In this rebuild, the Thunder's goals, they do not want to end up in the 9 spot.
No question. I mean, you're talking about like nightmare scenarios, and Oklahoma City lived through one of those at the lottery last year with a chance at 2 top 5 picks and ended up with only the number 6 pick. Now, I think Oklahoma City did very well given their circumstances on draft night. But you're right. Like they are holding on by a thread with those teams in front or just ahead of them. But all have circumstances that make you think they could turn the lights out on this season. And then Oklahoma City's left with then it's their move, right? It's if these teams play their hand, like Portland, San Antonio, Indiana, if these teams pull the plug, Oklahoma City is going to have work to do. And they're going to have to get creative and very tanky to stay where they're at, or, you know, or else they risk falling in losing some valuable ground as far as their lottery odds are concerned. Do you think we're close to them, you know, starting to put guys on the back burner or just not play certain guys at all? Like, are we close to a plantar fasciitis situation? Are we nearing that territory, or are we still too far away from it?
I don't think that they can. Now, I think ideally you're exactly halfway through the season. You don't want to wait till last minute because that's out of your hands and there's other teams that are going to tank. So you don't want to wait that long. The problem is there's only 2 guys that you can really rest and it make a difference. And that's Kenrich Williams and Mike Muscala, because they're vets. They're not a part of the young core, not necessarily a part of the long-term big picture. So you can get by with resting guys like that. They're bench players, and that would affect winning. I mean, they make such a big impact. And, you know, if you give all of Moose's minutes and all of Kenny Hustle's minutes to rookies and undrafted guys, second-round guys, that's going to make a difference when, you know, it comes down to these close games. The problem is Shea is too good to tank. He's also 23 years old and, you know, the star of your future. It's going to be a tough conversation to try to rest him. Same with Lou Dort, same with Josh Giddey. Like, I mean, these guys see the big picture. These guys know what it's about, and they would do it. I don't think that that's a problem, but, you know, like perception, league-wide perception, resting your young guys and things like that to try to get losses, you know, resting SGA and Dort and Giddey and giving all those minutes to Wiggins and Poku and Maladone or whoever it may be. I mean, you know, then people start chirping again. And, you know, I don't know. I'm not saying that they won't do it, but, you know, SGA did have a legit injury last year. And then you had Al Horford who you could sit and shut down, and he was cool with that. And it worked out. I just don't see any scenario this time, except for shutting down or trading away Muscala and Kenrich Williams. And I don't think that they want to trade away those guys, but their hand may be forced because that may be the only way to really make this happen.
I don't know how they play. So tonight they started Shea, Dort, Giddey, Wiggins, and JRE. Like you said, those are three rookies and then your two main guys. Like if they could start those five for the rest of the year. And if they do, I don't know that they don't reach 27, 28 wins, no matter who they play off the bench. And again, that maybe they strip it down and like they rest Bazley for a stretch or whatever, but like they got contributions from Bazley, Trey Mann, Ty Jerome. We're not even talking about Favors. We're not talking about Maladone. We're not talking about Poku. Like we're talking Ty Jerome, Trey Mann, Darius Bazley. That is a very young 8-man rotation that I don't think you're going to sit. You know, I don't think you're going to sit any of those guys unless it's an injury, and they're going to be left with a team that's going to play incredibly hard the entire time, well coached, put in great positions, and an absolute stud that's leading the team, and they're playing with a ton of confidence. Like no matter what, even when they're down, like they play the right way. Like the result, it can absolutely go the other way for them, and I worry that they're going to, you know, end the season with sitting there with 27, 28 wins and in that like 8 to 10 range, right? Like we've talked about.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up even when they're down, because I don't know if it's still the case, but at one point they were leading the league. I think they still are in most comebacks, 15 points or more down. And we saw that from them last year as well, 2 years in a row when the Thunder are like, purposely trying to get a top five pick. They have this young try hard team that's coming down over and over again from 15, 20, 25 points and winning. Like it's, first of all, it's unheard of. Second of all, it's impressive. Like you had to tip your hat to them, whether you want them to do it or not.
Right.
You know, and you had to love the culture and the mindset and the will and all those things, but it really is going to be difficult to, you know, you're already on the outside looking in because you're not one of the top three. The best odds are the top three odds. It's 52.1%. Anything outside of that, you have less than a coin flip chance. Now, the number four spot, you still have a 48.1% chance. So you feel like it's still a coin flip. But once you get to five, it's 42.1 that you'll get a guy like Jabari Smith Jr. or Chet Holmgren or Paolo Banchero or Jaden Ivey. You know, and it keeps getting less and less and less. So it starts to become this scary proposition when you've got Shea and you've got Lou Dort and you've got Josh Giddey and you've got to play him. And we haven't spoken of it, but there's so many players resting for other teams because of COVID. You never know. Sure, you might see the Jazz and the Nuggets and the Nets upcoming on the schedule, but Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert and Jokic and KD and Kyrie may all be sitting.
Yep.
So you pick up some wins you don't think that you're going to pick up. So, you know, it's this is such an important season for the Thunder as far as adding talent to that young core. And, you know, it's going to be really, really fascinating the second half of the season. Probably the most fascinating thing to me is how will they kind of chart these waters and try to end up with the top five pick still.
I'm looking at the top nine. on Tankathon. I should say bottom nine, I guess. Orlando, yeah. Detroit, Houston, Oklahoma City, Indiana, San Antonio, New Orleans, and Sacramento.
Right.
Oklahoma City, this is just an aside. As far as like, if you were just going to pick one of those teams, who is like currently set up best for the future? Whose fans go to sleep with the most hope for the next few years and beyond for their team? Is Oklahoma City by a landslide? And I don't mean to sound like such a homer, because I can get kind of cynical about this stuff. But like Orlando, they've won 7 games. Detroit, Houston has another like toxic story in the news every other week. Indiana has no clue. They have incredibly talented players on their team. They have no idea what to do with them. And now they're probably going to trade them for much less than they're worth. San Antonio, kind of been irrelevant, but can't get out of the middle. Got some really talented players, but like, where are they headed? Like, who's their Shea, right? Do they have a player as good as him? Probably not. New Orleans is a cluster right now. Like, third coach in 3 years, Zion can't get on the floor. The Kings are the Kings. The Blazers, like, it's really dire. Like, these teams all have, like, incredibly volatile situations that can go one way or the other in a hurry. And Oklahoma City, it, like, we've talked about culture, and it really does matter. But, like, having a guy like Shea and a GM like Presti, you get to go through these seasons, and you get to go through things like prepping for the draft and lottery night with a little bit more peace of mind, because they're like, we're in good hands. And somebody like Shea just sets up a rebuild in a totally different way than what most of the teams that are around them, above and below them in the standings, are dealing with.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. They have, you know, one of the best features in the NBA, period. Because once you get past that nine, you know, you've got a lot of good teams. Obviously, you got all the best teams in the league once you start going, you know, down the standings. But as far as like mix of youth, future picks, all those things, the Thunder really are in a great, great position for the future. But yeah, it's that battle with those bottom nine teams for this particular season. Now, one silver lining, the Clippers pick that the Thunder owned this year could end up being really, really good. Right now, they're in the 15th spot. Paul George, rumored to possibly be missing the rest of the season. If that happens, hard to see Kawhi Leonard coming back. They're 21-22 right now. Now, the problem is it's going to be hard for them not to make the play-in, because they're 21-22. And the last play-in team in the West right now is the Trailblazers, who are 16-25, and they just lost Dame. So then you're like, okay, who else is going to make it? Maybe the Kings will try at 17-27. Maybe the Pelicans. They're 5-5 in the last 10, 1-2 in a row, and they're 16-26. Maybe they get Zion back. Brandon Ingram's been playing pretty well lately, so maybe they make a run. But you really, if you're the Thunder, want to see the Clippers drop out of that play-in spot. There's rumors they could be sellers at the deadline, because they see this as a lost season and they want to kind of reset as far as bench depth and role players go, and get offload some money in a lost season. So that's kind of a silver lining that could end up being a really good pick, maybe a top 10 pick, maybe a lottery pick for sure. I say maybe for sure. It seems like it'll be a lottery pick. I can't say for sure yet. But yeah, the Thunder, as far as those teams go, future is looking great, but they really, really want to add a Jabari, Paolo or Ivy, or maybe an AJ Griffin to this core.
That top four is it's a seamless fit for any of those four guys. Would you agree?
Well, that's what's great about having Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Josh Giddey as the top two pieces of your young core moving forward. Obviously, Lu Dort is that third guy. But I said this in an article for Daily Thunder today. As far as like blue chip talent, you know you can build with them guys, it's SGA and Giddey. Lou Dort, I think, is one of those guys, but he kind of projects more to be like a really, really good role player instead of like a star, unlike the other two. But those guys are 6'6", and SGA has a 6'11 wingspan. And then Josh Giddey is, like you said earlier, 6'9". So that gives you so many options. You can draft anybody. You just take best talent, yep, whether it's a guard, forward, a center. I know that everybody wants a center or a power forward. We need a big, Thunder fans are saying, and I get that. But you can take Jaden Ivey at 6'4". He can shoot. I think that's the biggest need, is shooting. And you can slot him right in there with Giddey, because he can play, if you want to, a small ball power forward. Shea can play the 1-3. Giddey can play the 1-4. It's absurd. Like, they give you so much versatility.
You nailed it. And Jaden Ivey, 6'4 with a 6'10 wingspan. Like, he's the athletic. I mean, 6'4, 200 pounds. He's the athletic freak that can also shoot. And yep, that's something that's incredibly rare. It's what finds him at the top of the draft. For those that are wondering who Jaden Ivey is, he is a shooting guard who plays for Purdue. And he's really, really fun. He's explosive. I was telling you, Brandon, the other day when I was first watching him, like, he shoots exactly like Ja Morant, but just with higher percentages. He moves around, like, everything about his game looks like Ja Morant. And I think Spencer was telling us that there is some connection between, like, some family connection. I think his mom was on the Grizzlies staff and, like, they're close. But, like, it's apparent he's, like, a huge fan and, like, is keyed in on everything Ja's doing. Cause, like, it really does look very similar. And on this team, you could play him at the two and, you know, like you're saying, move Shea, Dort, and Giddey around him. And it's a seamless fit. So I do think Thunder fans should start to open up their to the idea that they don't have to take one of the bigs. And that's not saying that they won't, you know, if they're in one of those top three spots, these bigs are for real. They're really good. Specifically Jabari Smith, I think, has really taken a step beyond the rest of the class, as far as size and shooting ability. He's incredible. Who's your favorite that you've watched so far?
Yeah. Jabari Smith has gone to number one for me, and, you know, it's kind of fluid, because I'm trying to watch the Thunder season and be, you know, involved in that. But I keep peeking on these upcoming rookies, cause I can't help it, just like I did last year. And right, so this week was kind of my Jaden Ivey deep dive week. And I really, really like him, but overall it's still Jabari Smith Jr. Like you said, he's such a great combination of size and shooting and defense and just overall skill set. I mean, he can be a really, really special player. I think if I had the number one pick, I go Jabari Smith Jr. right now. Number two, I'd probably still go Paolo, just because I feel like he's less of a risk than Chet. Three, I would take Chet Holmgren, just because the upside and ability at that size and position is just, it's kind of too good to pass up. But I worry, because I feel like he's got the highest bust, you know, what am I trying to say? The highest ability to bust as well.
Bust potential.
Yeah, bust potential. Thank you. But then I would take Jaden Ivey. But I got to tell you, Jaden Ivey's kind of moving up my list. I am kind of, you know, thinking the Thunder need a big. So that's but really the biggest need is shooting. So right, that's another reason why I have Jabari so high, because he's both. He gives you size and he gives you shooting. But I would not be upset by any of those four at all.
No doubt. Yeah, and Ivey, he's a thrill. He is so explosive and fast and kind of the exact opposite of Shea in that he doesn't, like, Shea plays at this really unique speed and pace and really doesn't get sped up. And Ivey is like shot out of a cannon. And I think the contrast of those two on the floor at the same time would be so much fun.
Yeah, it would basically, not to go there, but it would be like KD and Russ. Like, as far as like styles, yeah. next to each other, because KD was that smooth, beautiful game, but not really physical. And then Russ was just all energy, physicality, and just furious anger on the court, and so exciting and thrilling to watch. And, you know, they made such a good duo. And that's really – and I'll take it a step further. And then James Harden, that third piece, was like kind of like the best passer of the three and, you know, setting guys up and, you know, just so skilled with the ball like Josh Giddey. Obviously, these three guys wouldn't be the original Thunder Big Three. That's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime, you know, lightning-in-a-bottle thing. But, you know – there would be some parallels. Ivy would be a lot of fun. That's kind of the one thing also that this young core is lacking. And it's surprising because the Thunder have always got, you know, these really athletic, electric guys. And, you know, they don't really have one right now. Jaden yeah. Ivy would absolutely be that exciting, thrilling, athletic dude to watch.
And Jabari's kind of like that, but just a bigger version. He is like a gazelle. He is so yeah. long and fast and a great playmaker and shooter. Like he's really come on power forward from Auburn. One last question before we go. Who are some, we saw Cam Reddish get dealt today. Kevin Knox was also in that deal. Two guys that Thunder fans have been, you know, talking about the possibility of maybe Oklahoma City cashes in a first rounder for one of these guys, for Reddish. Wouldn't have to give a first rounder for Knox, but guys that you know, teams, you know, might not be in the best situation for the team they were on, might see, you know, if Presti wants to bring them to Oklahoma City, they're both now gone as far as that scenario is concerned. Are there any other guys around the league that you think Oklahoma City might eye as, you know, a young guy on his rookie deal that might just need a change of scenery that Presti could take advantage of?
The obvious one, just because he was mentioned today, was Mo Bamba. You know, I know a lot of people are down on Mo Bamba, but he's played pretty well this season. He's shooting 33% from three, which doesn't sound all that great, but as a 23-year-old 7-footer with a 7'10" wingspan, that's not bad. And he's blocking over two shots a game, averaging 10 points a game, 8.4 rebounds in 28 minutes. And, you know, he's been with the Magic, you know, not to say, you know, anything about the Magic, but in this Thunder culture with that raw talent and potential, and you can get him so cheap. Like you saw what Cam Reddish went for. And the worry with Cam Reddish is not only do you have to give up draft capital, but you're going to have to give him an extension and he's going to want bigger money. Bamba, you're going to be able to, just because his career thus far doesn't call for it, you're not going to have to give him big money right now. So I think that he's worth a shot, and he plays a position that the Thunder obviously need. He's got the potential to be a stretch big. I think he's worth a small roll of the dice because it's not going to cost that much. Like if you get him for like the Phoenix pick, which is going to be like the 28, 29, or 30th pick of this draft, I would do that for Mo Bamba. Absolutely.
Yeah, right now that Phoenix pick is sitting at 30. Another guy that I saw mentioned today, Charlotte you know, could be interested in moving off of PJ Washington.
Yeah.
And that's another guy that would be a seamless fit into what Oklahoma City's doing. Again, if we're talking about, you know, where Oklahoma City needs to find themselves at the end of the season, he's probably going to work against you there, but he's an interesting player. He's an interesting player. Every time I don't watch the Hornets a ton, but when I do, I've seen really good stuff from PJ Washington over the last couple of years, and it just seems like they're loaded at his position, and loaded as in like the rotations, there's just not a ton of minutes for him. And I think he could really help a team, and a team like Oklahoma City could really help him in that they could give him a defined role in a solid system.
Oh, I'd trade for PJ Washington. Absolutely. He's shooting 41% from three on 4.6 attempts per game for his career, shooting 38.6 from three. He's averaging 10.3 points per game, 5.6 rebounds, and like his career average is 12.2 points, 6 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. He can play either four positions, small four or power four. He's 6'7". With that stroke, I would absolutely trade for PJ Washington. And again, he's a guy that, you know, you're not going to get him as cheap as Mo Bamba, but could you get him for about what Cam Reddish went for? Probably. Yeah. And to me, that's absolutely worth it. And he's a guy that, you know, the Thunder need anybody that can play the four position and can shoot. And that's PJ Washington.
Yeah. And there, I will say, I thought the Knicks did pretty well in what they gave up for Reddish. And I know the Hawks are probably just glad that they aren't, you know, on the hook for an extension for Reddish. That's probably as valuable as anything they got back from the Knicks. But I thought that was pretty good business by the Knicks getting Reddish for what they got. Because there were teams like Oklahoma City could have easily outbid what New York got him for.
Yeah, and I think that the reason that you didn't see OKC involved in that is because of the extension. You're going to have to give him some pretty big money. And is he worth that money? He's having a really good year, but his previous year is not so hot. You know, which player is he? You don't know exactly. If you're going to tie up that kind of money in a rebuild, it's just it ruins your flexibility. It ruins your chance to take on other contracts for more picks or other prospects or assets. And then when you're pushing in the chips, you want to have a clean slate here in the next 2 years. So you know what? So if you want to go out and buy a big prize free agent or trade for a guy with a big contract, you know, you want SGA to be the only big contract, maybe Lou Dort on your books. And then Cam Reddish just kind of, he's a nice player. And I would like for the Thunder to have him, but is he worth the risk of, you know, kind of muddying up your clean salary sheet? I don't think he is. And you're giving up draft capital, and he might hurt your chance to get a better draft pick this year. So I get it. But I do think the Knicks who want to win right now, I think it was a really, really good deal for them.
Last thing, thoughts on a Serge Ibaka homecoming?
Yeah, so here's my deal. So the Clippers, if they're sellers at the deadline, like they're rumored to be, first of all, that's great news for the Thunder because that means they're kind of, you know, wanting to get rid of talent this year to offload money and to kind of reset things. That helps the Thunder's draft pick since they own it. And I think the Thunder would be willing to take any talent off of their hands just because it helps the Thunder. And they'll get an asset for it. My thing is, you know, if it's like a second rounder, like somebody proposed on Twitter, I don't think it's worth taking basically a $10 million contract. They took on a Derek Favors contract for $10 million and got a first round pick. I know that Serge Ibaka's on the last year of his deal, Favors had one more year, so I get it. But the Thunder are the only team with cap space at the trade deadline. Lots of teams are going to want to dump salary. So I think that the Thunder have leverage. And if the Clippers want to give their future first, they have one more first round pick they can give up now since it's been a couple more years. If they want to give up their 2028 unprotected pick, okay. I think it's going to take a first round pick because the Thunder's cap space is going to be at a premium. And I think there's going to be a few teams that want to use it. So a second rounder is not going to cut it. But if they're willing to, then yes, I will welcome Eric Congo back with open arms. Absolutely.
I mean, that would be a home run, but you really think Serge Ibaka taking on him for 8 weeks is going to fetch a first rounder?
Well, I don't think the Clippers would be willing to do that, but it would save them $40 million in luxury tax payments because they're so far over the cap and it's a wasted season. So is it worth it to you to free up that amount of money? I don't know. That's up to the Clippers. But like I said, no other team's going to be able to take on these contracts. And we've already seen the Thunder take on two salary dumps and get first rounders. So I think that if there's a bidding war with even two teams, you know, one second rounder becomes two second rounders, becomes maybe a first round pick, protected first round pick. I mean, I think so.
Okay, $40 million, man. That's a You know what talks really loud when it comes to negotiation time? Money.
Yeah.
$40 million is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
That's a lot of chicken nuggets.
It absolutely is.
All right. We're getting out of here. We will be back weekly for the rest of the season talking about games, the most recent games, and then we're going to be taking you into trade deadline and through the rest of the season, obviously into the off season, where Oklahoma City has a lot of very important stuff, a lot of key dates, obviously lottery night, draft night, free agency, and everything beyond. So we will be back weekly, Brandon and I, and we will probably have a couple special guests along the way. So stay tuned for that. Really appreciate you guys listening. Good to be back. Brandon, thanks so much, man. This is going to be fun.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be back, man. Glad we're doing this again.
All right. Talk to you guys soon. This is the Daily Thunder Podcast.
A great way to support Daily Thunder is by visiting one of our partners, ShopGood. ShopGood has you covered on all Thunder-related clothing items, including original and hand-printed shirts, hats, and stickers for both adults and kids. Be sure to check out our Thunder Shield tee, which pays homage to Oklahoma's Native American culture and state flag. To view Daily Thunder's entire catalog at ShopGood, visit shopgoodokc.com/daily-thunder. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for supporting Daily Thunder.